Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Friday, February 8th, 2019. Coming up this hour,
stocks in Asia tumble as U.S.-China trade tensions resurface.
Oil heads for its biggest weekly loss this year while Congress targets OPEC.
Hedge funds post their first monthly gain since July.
And Theresa May heads to Dublin in search of a breakthrough on Brexit.
Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos accuses the National Enquirer of blackmail and extortion. Plus, the Supreme Court blocks Louisiana restrictions on abortion doctors. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. Islanders and Devils met, and the Isles wanted a shootout. The baseball world remembering Hall of Famer Frank Robinson, who passed away at 83.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 991 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak, brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit sectorspdrs.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF.
And U.S. futures are slumping as new concerns surface about trade talks with China. It is 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down 8 points, Dow futures down 70, NASDAQ futures down 33. The DAX in Germany, little changed. CAC in Paris up 0.1%, FTSE 100 up about 0.2%. Nikkei 225 in Japan fell 2%. Hang Seng in Hong Kong down about 0.2%. 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 2.64%, yield on the 2-year 2.47%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.1%, down 4 cents to $52.59 a barrel. COMEX gold down about 0.1%, down $1 to $13.1320 an ounce. The euro, $1.1328, and the yen, 109.84. Nathan.
Karen, stocks are sliding as President Trump says he is not likely to meet Chinese leader Xi Jinping this month. He spoke with Bloomberg White House reporter Jennifer Jacobs.
I asked him, Mr. President, are you planning to meet with China's President Xi in the next month or so? And he said, not yet. No scheduled meeting planned for right now. And I said, but no intention to meet with him before the tariff deadline, though, right? And he shook his head and said no, and then added, unlikely.
That makes the prospect of a deal less likely before the tariff truce expires on March 1st.
Also weighing on sentiment, a Politico report that President Trump will ban Chinese telecom equipment from U.S. wireless networks. Bloomberg's Denise Pellegrini has details.
The word is the executive order could come before Mobile World Congress Barcelona. That starts February 25th. Meantime, Washington is threatening possible retaliation against countries that use Chinese equipment for certain infrastructure. Germany may be among the allies on the firing line here. We're hearing the country's government today ruled out an outright ban on Huawei. Denise Pellegrini, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Denise, thanks. And this is all weighing on global equities this morning, hitting stocks in Asia especially hard. Bloomberg's David Inglis reports from Hong Kong.
Nathan and Karen, Asian stocks fell the most since Christmas. The benchmark fell by 1%. Very light volumes, though, since mainland China, Taiwan, and Vietnam are among the markets still shut for the Lunar New Year holidays, and a further rally in the bond markets with yields across the region basically falling to levels last seen in 2016. Bucking the trend was Hong Kong, though, which reopened after a three-day break with the Hang Seng Index reversing losses early. In Hong Kong, I'm David Inglis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, David, thank you. U.S. future is also sliding this morning, and as trade weighs on stocks, it increases the chance of a deal. That's according to Guggenheim Chief Investment Officer Scott Minard.
We could actually do damage to the expansion if we don't get a deal done with China. So I think that the White House in particular is very focused on making sure some kind of a deal happens. Now, I don't know that that means that we're going to cut the tariffs by March the 1st, but I think the administration would be loath to escalate tensions right now.
U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin head to Beijing next week for the latest round of negotiations.
Oil is heading for its biggest weekly loss this year, down more than 5% on the week. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with the latest. Good morning, John.
Yeah, Nate, record U.S. crude production is weighing on prices, reversing gains from last month. That's when OPEC cuts took effect. Meanwhile, Congress is moving forward with legislation that would allow the U.S. government to sue OPEC for inflating prices. Bills in both the House and Senate would subject the cartel to possible antitrust action from the Justice Department. Similar measures have been proposed in the past, with former presidents threatening vetoes, but President Trump could be more amenable given his frequent Twitter attacks on OPEC. Checking prices right now, NYMEX down 5 cents a barrel, $52.59. Brent crude, the international benchmark, that's up 19 cents at $61.81 a barrel. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. Hedge funds last month posted their first positive return since July with a gain of 2.9% for January. Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett has the story.
Six out of seven strategies made money, according to preliminary numbers from the Bloomberg Hedge Fund Database. Event-driven funds led the pack, rising 5.4%. January's gain marks rare good news for fund managers. The industry had its worst performance last year since 2011, as many were unable to sidestep the volatility that pummeled markets. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thank you. Now, on the Brexit front, Prime Minister Theresa May heads to Dublin today, continuing her search for a breakthrough on talks. Bloomberg's Ewan Potts joins us live from London with details. Good morning, Ewan.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. With less than 50 days until Brexit, the UK PM is in Dublin today. She'll be having dinner with her Irish counterpart, Leo Varadkar. On the menu will be talks about the contentious issue of the Irish backstop, how to prevent a hard border when the UK leaves the European Union. Yesterday, after a day of tense meetings in Brussels, the British Prime Minister and the EU agreed to another deadline and further talks by the end of the month. But as the clock ticks down, the European Union insists it doesn't want to reopen the divorce deal. Live in London, I'm Ewan Potts, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Ewan, thank you. Back here in the U.S., it looks like Sears will survive. For now, Chairman Edward Lampert's $5.2 billion bid to keep the retailer alive was approved by a bankruptcy judge. The decision allows Sears to emerge from bankruptcy with about 425 stores and 45,000 jobs.
Now, some stocks we're watching in the early trading. Shares of Expedia are up 7%. The online travel agent's profit and forecast beat estimates. Shares of Skechers are higher by nearly 20% after earnings and guidance also topped estimates. Shares of Mattel are up 16%. Aggressive cost cuts helped boost the toy maker's fourth quarter results. This is Bloomberg. It's 5:07 on Wall Street. Time to get the latest world and national news on this Friday morning. Good morning, Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
Good morning, Nathan. Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos is accusing the publisher of the National Enquirer, David Pecker, of extortion and blackmail. Bezos says the tabloid threatened to publish revealing personal photos of him unless he stopped investigating its acquisition of other private images and messages. Bezos, who owns the Washington Post, detailed his interactions with the Enquirer's owner, American Media Incorporated, in a blog post. Acting Attorney General Matthew Whitaker has agreed to appear before the House Judiciary Committee today, defusing at least for the moment a charged partisan debate over threats to subpoena him. Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz disagrees with the hearing, saying Democrats are more interested in asking Whitaker about the Russia probe, and Attorney General nominee William Barr will be confirmed shortly.
Matthew Whitaker is going to be a private citizen at some point next week when Barr is confirmed by the Senate. So it seems a little ridiculous to be conducting an oversight hearing with a guy who's going to be out of a job in a week. I think the real reason Democrats want Whitaker in is because they want to hurt Barr. And if they ask Whitaker questions and he provides answers and then Barr deviates in any way from what Whitaker says, then that's problematic for Barr down the road.
A divided U.S. Supreme Court blocked Louisiana from requiring abortion doctors to get admitting privileges at a local hospital. The four dissents were new Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh, Justices Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, and Neil Gorsuch. Former Michigan Representative John Dingell, the longest-serving member of Congress, has died. Texas Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee says the Democrat was a master of legislative deal-making and a staunch advocate for the U.S. auto industry and civil rights.
John Dingell was a great American, a great man, and certainly a great congressperson and a great legacy because his family had been involved in the United States Congress. If I recall correctly, he was actually a page. His father was a member of the United States Congress, and he truly upheld this institution with great love.
John Dingell was 92. France and Italy are facing their worst diplomatic crisis since the war. Bloomberg's Gregory Viscusi has more from Paris.
France called its ambassador back to Paris for consultations after Deputy Prime Minister Luigi Di Maio met members of France's Yellow Vest protest movement. France called that unacceptable meddling in domestic affairs. Di Maio said he was simply building alliances ahead of May's EU elections. In Paris, Gregory Viscusi, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thanks. Coming up on 5:10 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with John Stashower.
Nathan, first place Islanders, last place Devils. They went to a shootout and to the fourth round before John Bailey scored. The Isles won 2-1. Rangers fans will get emotional tonight at the Garden. The 1994 team, the only Rangers to hoist the Stanley Cup in the last 79 years, will be honored 25 years after their title. Nets tonight host Chicago. Caris LeVert will play. He was Brooklyn's best player early in the season, then suffered a foot injury that was first believed to be season-ending. Nets yesterday acquired veteran big man Greg Monroe. The Knicks cut ties with Enes Kanter and the just-acquired Wesley Matthews. They've become free to sign elsewhere. Knicks, losers of 14 in a row, play tonight in Detroit. The Lakers did not make that big trade with New Orleans for Anthony Davis, so everything's on hold until this summer. The Lakers then played in Boston.
Ingram to the rim, all the way to the basket, blocked by Horford. Ball's loose, grabbed by Rondo for the win. He got it! Rajon Rondo at the buzzer! A follow-away two-pointer! Lakers 129, Celtics 128! It's over on a game winner by Rajon Rondo!
Lakers radio the call. L.A. had once trailed in that game by 18. Hall of Famer Frank Robinson passed away at 83 after a battle with cancer. Broke in less than a decade after Jackie Robinson. Went on to win the NL MVP award with the Reds, the AL MVP with the Orioles when he won the Triple Crown in 1966. Then became the first African-American manager ever, a player manager in his first game in 1975 against the Yankees. He homered in the first inning. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. Tune in tonight for the Bloomberg Business of Sports show when we hear from the go-to guy for athletes seeking investment opportunities in tech. Mastery founder Rudy Klein-Thomas discusses players taking on their financial futures. You can catch that conversation tonight at 8 and tomorrow at 11 a.m. Bloomberg Business of Sports on Bloomberg Radio. S&P futures down 9 points, Dow futures down 78, NASDAQ futures down 35. This is Bloomberg. And Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Stevens Institute of Technology, the Quant School on the Hudson, with an online master's in financial analytics that teaches the latest data science techniques. Learn more at stevens.edu/fintech.
Global News, 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stock index futures and Asian shares falling as concern over economic growth and trade disputes sent global stock markets toward their first weekly loss since December. European shares are mainly steady. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 10 points, Dow futures down 81, NASDAQ futures down 36. The DAX in Germany is down less than a tenth of a percent. 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 2.64%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.47%. NYMEX crude oil down a tenth of a percent or 6 cents to $52.58 a barrel. COMEX gold little changed at $13.14.20 an ounce. The euro, $1.1335, and the yen, 109.80. Hasbro and Goodyear are among companies scheduled to report earnings this morning, and shares of Skechers climbing this morning up more than 19% after reporting quarterly profit that topped analyst estimates. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Karen. The world's richest man, Jeff Bezos, claims the publishing company of the National Enquirer is blackmailing him. The Amazon CEO says the tabloid owned by AMI threatened to publish compromising photos related to his extramarital affair if he did not do as requested. AMI chairman and CEO David Pecker is a longtime friend of President Trump. In a 5-4 vote, the Supreme Court blocked Louisiana from requiring abortion doctors to get admitting privileges at a local hospital. It gives a reprieve to clinics as the justices consider whether to take up an appeal. In the NHL, the Islanders beat the Devils in a shootout 2-1. The Capitals won in overtime. In the NBA, the Celtics lost on a buzzer beater to the Lakers 129-128. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thank you. It is 5:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and we're joined on this Friday morning by Jeremy Stretch, head of G10 FX Strategy at CIBC, Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce. Always good to talk with you, Jeremy, especially with the dollar on this pretty remarkable run it's been on for the last few days. Now that trade tensions seem to be back in the foreground between the U.S. and China, does the greenback have further to run in your view?
Well, it has been quite a spectacular rebound since that trough that we saw in the wake of the Fed decision and the change in the bias. But we are back into risk-off territory, and of course, correspondingly, the dollar does tend to do relatively well in terms of its performance by virtue of its liquidity criteria. And of course, the big variable in terms of the dollar index, in terms of the DXY, is the performance of the euro against the dollar. And of course, the euro is very susceptible to headwinds in relation to global trade, because of course the German economy is driven by exports, and the context or the concept of weaker trade environments playing out certainly doesn't augur particularly well for the performance of the euro. So we have seen euro dollar under pressure and the dollar index making these good gains. Now, we've traded through some fairly significant technical levels over the course of the last few sessions. It may well be the case that we perhaps do a little bit of a degree of profit taking, but nevertheless, unless we see some degree of improvement in trade concerns going into next week, and of course we have Lighthizer and Mnuchin in Beijing, then the dollar will likely remain relatively well supported.
So where do you see the dollar going as we head into those trade talks in Beijing next week?
Well, I think that in the first instance, the market has certainly taken a rather dim view of the trade outlook. I think many people have been hoping and expecting that perhaps we could see a meeting being scheduled between the president of both China and the U.S. over the course of the next couple of weeks to try and get ahead of that March 1st deadline. But now that that scenario has been displaced, and certainly some of the language was suggesting that any meeting is going to be some way away, then it does seem to be the case that trade issues are going to continue to be front and center. And of course, as I say, for those currencies which are cyclically correlated or growth driven, so you can argue you can be looking at the euro on one side, or we can look at currencies like the Australian dollar on the other, those outlooks are going to remain compromised, at least for the short term. So as I say, the path of least resistance probably favors the US, but also benefits those safer haven currencies like the yen and the Swiss franc.
And in terms of where the euro could be headed with its reliance on trade and with projections of growth continuing to be eroded in the eurozone, what's your base case there?
Well, it is true that the data backdrop has been rather disappointing. We've seen that reflected in terms of the data that we've seen this week in the German real economy, for example, into the latter stages of 2018. And of course, the big focus next week will be the Q4 GDP release from both Germany and the Eurozone. Now, we wouldn't expect either of those to reveal a negative print, but unlike Italy, which of course has gone back into a technical recession, but there is severe headline risk in terms of those data releases. And if we are going to see activity levels coming in near a flat or maybe just a 0.1 increase, then that probably will keep those year-to-date lows at 112.90 in euro dollar very much in focus. Albeit, of course, it was only a week or so ago that we were trading north of 115. So I'm a little mindful that we've come a long way very quickly. I think we've priced in a lot of negativity in the eurozone economy, and in a sense, if we can see a degree of resolution in the trade issues over the course of the next few weeks, then I wouldn't be surprised that these sort of levels down around the sort of 113 threshold actually provide some good medium-term levels to be accumulating some euros at cheaper values.
In our last minute here with those headwinds, is the dollar a haven currency now?
Well, I think in the context of the liquidity of the US dollar, it always acts as a sort of a support mechanism for the US in times of economic uncertainty. So in the traditional metric, you would always look for Currencies which have little reliance in terms of foreign investor inflows, so i.e. the current account surplus nations relative to the deficit nations in times of uncertainty. But of course, the dollar has a different dynamic, or it beats to a slightly different drum because of the liquidity component. And so I think until we see some degree of rebuilding of confidence regarding the global backdrop, then the dollar is going to hold up rather better than one might have expected. And of course, we also watch out for the unfolding nature of the domestic data, because of course there has been this sea change in terms of market expectations for the Fed. But it's going to be fascinating to see as the delayed data starts to come out post the government shutdown
Jeremy Stretch, head of G10FX at CIBC, thanks as always for your insights. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by New York Community Bank. Ask about their My Community Interest Checking with free New York Community Bank online and mobile banking. Earn more, get more. Visit mynycb.com.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures and stocks in Asia are falling as President Trump says he's not likely to meet Chinese leader Xi Jinping this month. He spoke with Bloomberg White House reporter Jennifer Jacobs.
I asked him, Mr. President, are you planning to meet with China's President Xi in the next month or so? And he said, not yet. No scheduled meeting planned for right now. And I said, but no intention to meet with him before the tariff deadline, though, right? And he shook his head and said no, and then added, unlikely.
And that makes the prospect of a deal less likely before the tariff truce expires on March 1st.
Meanwhile, Politico is reporting that President Trump is going to ban Chinese telecom equipment from U.S. wireless networks soon. That, plus concerns over trade, sent stocks in Asia sharply lower today. Bloomberg's David Finnerty reports.
It started in a pretty ugly mood today. We saw the Japanese markets falling pretty hard. And most of it is to do with Donald Trump not being able to meet President Xi, and also this idea that he may ban telecom companies from China entering the U.S. market. So all of that wasn't taken very well. And you're seeing a real demand for things like treasury bonds, people really going into the haven areas. And so we're ending the week on a pretty downbeat note.
Checking the trading in Asia, Japan's Nikkei dropped 2%, while Chinese stock markets remained closed for a holiday.
Crude is heading for its biggest weekly loss this year as a slumping global growth outlook weighs on demand. Checking oil right now, NYMEX crude oil, it's down almost a tenth of a percent, down 4 cents to $52.60 a barrel, while Brent is up a third of a percent to $61.85.
In corporate news, Sears is back from the brink and will live on for now. Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett has the story.
Chairman Eddie Lampert's $5.2 billion bid to keep the once dominant retailer alive was approved by bankruptcy judge Robert Drain. The court decision seals Lampert's quest to initially preserve about 425 stores and 45,000 jobs. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thank you. And futures this morning are moving lower. S&P futures down 8 points, Dow futures down 70, NASDAQ futures down 31. The DAX in Germany's up a tenth of a percent. CAC in Paris up 0.2%, and the FTSE 100 up almost the same. 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 2.64%, yield on the 2-year 2.47%, and the 30-year yield 2.98%. COMEX gold is little changed, up 60 cents to $1,314.80 an ounce. The euro, $1.1337. The British pound, $1.2961. And the yen, 109.86. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. It's 5:33 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr is here with more of what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. The world's richest man is in a war of words with the National Enquirer. Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos says the owner of the tabloid, AMI, has threatened to blackmail him. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
Bezos has accused the Enquirer and Trump friend David Pecker of extortion and blackmail. He says he will now self-publish photos of himself and TV personality Lauren Sanchez. He now says he's hired investigators to find out if the story threat was politically motivated. Bezos says he wants to know if the threats were an attempt to stop the Washington Post from publishing stories criticizing the president. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
The Supreme Court is blocking Louisiana from enforcing new regulations on abortion clinics. In a 5-4 vote, the high court will not allow the state to put into effect a law that requires abortion providers to have admitting privileges at nearby hospitals. Acting Attorney General Matt Whitaker will show up at today's hearing on Capitol Hill to address the House Judiciary Committee. There was some concern he would back out over a tentative subpoena over conversations he may or may not have had with President Trump regarding ongoing investigations. White House senior advisor Ivanka Trump says she is not concerned about special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation. Speaking to ABC, the president's daughter says she is not worried about further charges coming out of the investigation.
There's nothing there. Yet it's created weeks and weeks and months and of headlines. So no, I have zero concern.
U.S. Special Envoy to Venezuela Elliot Abrams says that several countries have offered to take in embattled Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro if he steps down from power. Elliot did not name the countries, but said that Venezuela would not be able to move on towards a democratic regime if Maduro stayed. Abrams said negotiations with the Maduro government only serve to extend his power.
Every day that Maduro remains in power is a day where political prisoners remain in jail, detainees are abused, and Venezuelans go without food and medicine.
A shipment of U.S. humanitarian aid arrived at Venezuela's western border yesterday. However, Maduro has pledged to block the supplies. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thank you. 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Nathan, Islanders, Devils in Newark, New Jersey got an early goal. Then Matthew Barzell is 16th of the year, later first period for the Isles. Stayed 1-1 all the way until the fourth round of the shootout.
Here is Josh Bailey, 2-for-7 this season. Bailey wide, back in. Islanders win!
Not a good move by Josh Bailey as he put that puck on his backhand and then to the forehand.
Josh Bailey has scored 3 of the 4 Islanders shootout goals on the season, and remarkably, the Islanders have won 3 shootouts, including this one, as Josh Bailey gets the game-deciding goal.
MSG had the call. Rangers tonight host Carolina. They'll honor the 1994 Stanley Cup winners. Henrik Lundqvist will wear a mask that's a replica of what Mike Richter wore 25 years ago. Knicks are in Detroit. They've lost 14 in a row. They cut ties with the disgruntled Enes Kanter and Wesley Matthews, who they just got from Dallas. The Nets have picked up veteran Greg Monroe. Karis LeVert will play tonight in Brooklyn against Chicago. He's been out since November with a foot injury at the time. He was the Nets' leading scorer. NBA trade deadline came and went. Anthony Davis was not dealt. He'll play the rest of the season with New Orleans. Then a trade may occur. The two teams that want Davis the most are the Lakers and Celtics. They met in Boston. L.A. came from 18 down and won on a Rajon Rondo shot at the buzzer. Golf at Pebble Beach. American Scott Langley, Brian Gay share the lead with Phil Mickelson one shot behind. Hall of Famer Frank Robinson has died at 83, only player to win MVPs in both leagues, later baseball's first ever African-American manager. For the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
Thank you, John. It is 5:37 on Wall Street. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now with the cover on Wisconsin's disastrous deal with Foxconn. Austin Carr wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
There was this big deal, $4.5 billion promised in subsidies to this Taiwanese manufacturer, Foxconn. They were supposed to create 13,000 factory jobs. It was supposed to be transformative for the state. But at least so far, based on our reporting, and this has been months of reporting, dozens of sources involved, things are not going so well in where the facility is based in Mount Pleasant, Wisconsin.
You can read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now and listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio. 5:38 on Wall Street time for the Tri-State Business Report. Let's check in with Bloomberg's Ed Khoury. Ed.
Morning, Nathan. The Grand Hyatt New York, the hotel that launched Donald Trump's career as a real estate developer, is being redeveloped by an investor group that plans to demolish it. Plan to replace the building with a 2-million-square-foot tower that includes office and retail as well as a new Hyatt. With backing from former workers at Toys R Us and Sears, New Jersey lawmakers voted Thursday to require companies to compensate employees dismissed in mass layoffs. The legislation would also extend the employee notice period for mass firings and require warnings about impending bankruptcies. A Connecticut manufacturers group is getting ready to lobby the legislature in opposition to a $15 minimum wage and paid family leave. The Hartford Courant says business owners, managers, and others attended a presentation by the New Haven Manufacturers Association last night on the legislative process. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
Thank you, Ed. It is 5:39 on Wall Street, and Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and on WCCO in Minneapolis, I'm reporting that Delta will launch flights with its newest plane from the Twin Cities to Texas in July.
I'm Steve Potusk, and on KNX in Los Angeles, we are talking about how cost-cutting and a rise in Barbie's star handed Mattel a quarterly win.
I'm Marcus Carlson on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're reporting on Theresa May's search for a Brexit breakthrough as the Prime Minister heads to Dublin.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KFAB in Omaha, California. Kellogg's CEO says the company can live with ho-hum cereal demand.
I'm Ed Corey on WTAM in Cleveland. I'm reporting investors are waiting for earnings results today from Cleveland Cliffs, focusing on the impact of the iron ore rally.
Those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Another story we're following for you, Sony is planning its biggest share buyback ever. The Japanese electronics maker will buy as much as $910 million of its own stock. Shares rose more than 4% in Tokyo today. Last week, Sony reported weaker profits in its PlayStation business, and it also cut its annual forecast, triggering the steepest share drop in almost 3.5 years. Futures on Wall Street pointed lower, with S&P futures down 9 points, Dow futures down 77, and NASDAQ futures down 35. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. The Daybreak's brought to you by Marks Paneth LLP. Marks Paneth Tax Advisors have helped family businesses reach their financial goals for over 100 years. At Marks Paneth, success is personal. Learn more at markspaneth.com/tax.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. And U.S. stock index futures are lower this morning as concern over economic growth and trade disputes send global stock markets toward their first weekly loss since December. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 10 points, Dow futures down 88, NASDAQ futures down about 37. The DAX in Germany is down 0.1%. 10-year Treasury up 4/32nds, yield 2.64%, yield on the 2-year 2.47%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.2% or 11 cents to $52.52 a barrel. COMEX gold that'll change at $13.1460 an ounce. The euro, $1.1337, and the yen, 109.84. And Hasbro and Goodyear among companies scheduled to report earnings today. Shares of Skechers, meanwhile, moving higher this morning after reporting quarterly profit that topped analyst estimates. Those shares up more than 19%. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos is accusing the National Enquirer and its publisher, David Pecker, of extortion and blackmail. Pecker is a longtime friend of President Trump. Bezos says the tabloid threatened to publish compromising photos related to his extramarital affair if he did not do as requested. The president's acting attorney general, Matthew Whitaker, will appear before the House Judiciary Committee, chaired by Democrat Jerry Nadler this morning. Whitaker said at first he wouldn't appear if he was subpoenaed. President Trump's former lawyer, Michael Cohen, has agreed to talk to the House Intelligence Committee behind closed doors today. In the NHL, the Islanders beat the Devils in a shootout 2-1. The Capitals won in overtime. In the NBA, the Celtics lost on a buzzer beater to the Lakers. Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, where it's nearly 5:49 on Wall Street. Time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our platform that offers informed perspectives on a range of global topics and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news. We're joined live now by Edward Evans, Bloomberg Opinion editor in our London bureau. Ed, let's begin with the escalating dispute between France and Italy. Why does Lionel Laurent think Emmanuel Macron is happy to wage this battle?
Never waste a good crisis is the answer. This, of course, is the unprecedented step France took of recalling its ambassador from Italy. This kind of diplomatic spat does not usually happen but between big EU member states. And it's about embarrassing Luigi Di Maio, Italy's deputy prime minister and the leader of the anti-establishment five-star movement. He, of course, met brazenly with some of the Gilets Jaunes protesters on French soil. But this is also a relatively risk-free way for Macron to assert himself on the international stage and give him a chance to try and regain some of the initiative, political initiative from the Yellow Vest movement ahead of the European Parliament elections this year. Don't forget, Di Maio had been guilty of some provocation here. He'd encouraged the Gilets Jaunes to keep going after violent protests against Macron's policy. He'd met face-to-face with a faction of the group. But by responding with such diplomatic force, France has effectively put Italy on the spot for Di Maio's actions. And don't forget, with Macron's position, he's going to try and use this incident to regain the domestic initiative at a time when the support for the Gilets Jaunes remains extremely high. He's crawling his way back from rock-bottom approval ratings and using a grand debate on the economy to try and build some support for his reform programme. It's going to be very difficult, but of course France needs to take some tough economic medicine.
All right, moving across the channel, Chris Bryant writes, the wheels have come off at Jaguar Land Rover. What's going on there?
Yes, the carmaker has had to write down $4 billion. Now, this hardly inspires confidence in its latest investment splurge. When companies book a large write-down, shareholders usually just shrug. That's because these impairments happened a long time after the market has usually formed a pretty accurate opinion of any company's financial position. Tata Motors hasn't been so lucky with how its own write-down was received this week. Now, this £3.1 billion non-cash impairment book by Jaguar Land Rover helped wipe almost 20% off Tata Motors' shares on Friday. Jaguar Land Rover, of course, was once Tata's golden child, but the luster has faded. Problems, demand for the company's sedans and diesel vehicles is sagging. China sales are in a tailspin. And Brexit, of course, might it make everything a whole lot worse. The important thing about this write-down is it signals that its previous spending splurges won't deliver the hoped-for financial returns. And if that's the case, then it's reasonable for shareholders and bondholders to question whether the new investments planned will either. After all, the person in charge of capital allocation, Chief Executive Officer Ralph Speth, hasn't changed.
And finally, Ed, tell us about this history lesson for bond investors that John Authors is providing this morning.
This is an absolutely fascinating study published by the National Bureau of Economic Research. And they've gone back through history and looked at how foreign government bonds have performed since 1815, of course, the year of the Battle of Waterloo. And history shows that in the world of sovereign debt, you are much better off by betting on the serial defaulters here. They've run the database. They've gone back to 1815, as I say. And if you look at countries like Mexico, it's subjected its backers to 11 defaults over its history since independence, but it still ended up actually offering an annualized return roughly triple that available from the US, UK or Canada. Look also at a default, and default isn't generally the end of the story and actually often creates some opportunities. On average, investors have been made whole and recouped all their losses by 5 years after the default, though it must be said the variation is absolutely enormous. More surprising is actually how well this asset class performed after 2008. Foreign government bonds survived much better than equities while continuing to generate a superior return to that offered from treasuries. Foreign bonds 3 years on from Lehman, in fact, had preserved wealth far better than equities. So what does this all add up to? Well, for those who can afford to take a long horizon, it suggests that emerging and frontier market bonds should not be ignored, although investors should certainly do their own due diligence.
Bloomberg Opinion editor Ed Evans, thanks as always. You can read more about these and other stories from Bloomberg Opinion. Just head over to Bloomberg.com/opinion. Bloomberg Terminal customers, type in OPIN Go on your terminal. Karen.
right, thanks, Nathan. It is 5:53 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Law Report. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington newsroom.
Purdue Pharma, Teva Pharmaceuticals, and other drug makers face a lawsuit by labor unions and union benefit funds claiming the overprescription of opioids is killing workers and ratcheting up health care costs. The Green New Deal resolution isn't the only climate item unveiled in Congress. A group of senators has introduced two bipartisan bills to boost carbon capture and storage technology. And former EPA head Carol Browner told a House committee that rising ocean temperatures and sea levels and other climate change impacts on ocean threaten life on Earth.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need on one legal research platform. Guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
All right, Steve, thank you. Now, another legal news. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff is investigating whether foreign governments had improper leverage over President Trump and his business interests. For more on this story, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to former federal prosecutor Ellie Honig.
Ellie, let's start with the basics. What can congressional committees do in investigation? What are their powers compared with, say, federal prosecutors?
The powers are actually quite different, and I think in important ways. Obviously, federal prosecutors have the heavier stick. They can bring criminal charges. They can arrest people. They can send people to prison. And by and large, Congress cannot do that. But the difference is the vast majority of the work that federal prosecutors do, whether it's Robert Mueller as special counsel of the Southern District of New York, is done under lock and key. It's done in grand juries. It's done in secrecy. And we, the public, only learn about what federal prosecutors are doing on the rare occasion when court filings go in or there's a public arrest. But Congress has the ability, A, to hold very public hearings, and we're about to see one tomorrow with Matthew Whitaker, and B, to do things quite quickly, to serve a subpoena, to schedule a hearing on fairly short notice, and to do it in a way that really ensures accountability. Also, Congress is really not limited in scope. Federal prosecutors can only look at criminal activity, but Congress can look at any form of waste, abuse, corruption, whether it's criminal or not.
So picking up on the scope, is Schiff just pursuing lines of inquiry that the Republican-led committee did not, or is he opening up new lines of inquiry?
It seems like he's doing both. I think Schiff has released in the last day or two a list of the types of questions that he wants to investigate. And I think Schiff is being careful. I think he does not want to be accused of overreaching or going into unnecessary areas, but he's made fairly clear what he's interested in. He's interested in collusion, collaboration between Trump and Russia. He's interested in Russian interference with the election, both of which I think are undisputably matters of importance to the Congress. And he wants to know about Trump's finances as those finances relate to his potential relationship with Russia, as those finances explain why Trump may have been indebted financially or otherwise to Russia. But I think Schiff has been savvy so far. I think he's made clear he's going to be aggressive, but I think he wants to avoid being rightly accused. He will be accused, but rightly accused of going on a fishing expedition or a witch hunt.
And that's former federal prosecutor Ellie Honig speaking yesterday with Bloomberg's June Grasso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law, weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio, and find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. Futures this morning moving lower. S&P futures down about 9 points. Dow futures down 75. NASDAQ futures down 32. 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 2.64%, and the yield on the 2-year 2.47%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.2% or 11 cents to $52.54 a barrel. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.